Welcome to the Word Warren. We're going to talk about books.
I like books.
I also like books.
Yeah, me too. It's a good thing we're all here today.
Yeah. I think you picked the right people for the podcast.
So today we have Justin.
Hello.
And Hannah.
Hello.
And Sarah.
Oh, and Sarah. Me. Yeah. Sorry. And Sarah over here too. You're like, I'm just the host.
And me, hosting. I'm Sarah.
Well, hi, Sarah. It's so nice to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think I mentioned this the last time we were on when we did humor last month, but like every time I introduce people, I like point at them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's not.
It's for the ear viewers.
It's for the ear viewers.
The ear viewers. Just know that as you are listening, that Sarah is making wild hand gestures.
Making a lot of hand gestures for no reason.
I once got in trouble at a company I worked at for saying I observed something because I only heard it. And I think about that a lot when we talk
hearing,
about ear viewers.
Hearing is a form of observation.
That's what I said. Okay. That's what I said. And they're like, well, normally it means with the eyes. And I was like, I don't. All right.
Okay. You know,
thanks for the feedback. I much appreciate it.
Okay. For sure.
It was a big corporation, so you always had to smile.
Oh, I hate
awesome.
That.
Thank you. I'll fix that. Oh, I'll fix how you don't understand language. Moving on.
Thank you. I'm going to buy you a dictionary for Christmas this year.
So I'm going to try something new this month because I didn't research anything. We're just going to try and talk about books in space.
Books in space.
Ooh. I love that there's like an echo effect
hold
to
on,
the
on,
word
hold
space.
On, hold on, yes. Hold on, hold on, hold on. Books in space.
Did you add an echo effect?
I did.
Yeah. Does sound echo in space?
No.
I just love how they're so connected, right? Like the wobble of the theremin and space, right? Like, mm-hmm. How would that sound in space?
I think sound doesn't really, like, travel much at all in space.
Yeah.
Because it's a vacuum, and sound doesn't really travel in a vacuum.
Right, because doesn't it require air?
It needs air
to have. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so sound doesn't really travel in space.
That's just the echoing in our heads.
Yes,
just
which honestly makes the idea of, like, space horror even more terrifying to me. Mm-hmm, it's that whole, like, in space, no one can hear you scream thing, and it's absolutely true.
It's for true.
Like, all of the starship battles that you see in sci-fi movies and stuff, really, you wouldn't be hearing the pew, 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 pew,
yeah,
pew.
Yeah.
It would just be silent explosions.
That would the most anticlimactic, like, fight. Right? Just watching. It's like watching an action scene on mute.
Yeah, it would be. It would be like that.
I wish that Event Horizon, the movie, was a book series.
Yeah. Event Horizon is so good.
So that's, when you say space horror, that is first and foremost in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think Event Horizon is probably one of the first few things out of all media that tied me closer to the space aspect of sci-fi. I was like, all right, space isn't whack, right?
It's not. Yeah. Absolutely.
As much as I love sci-fi, as much as I love TV shows and movies and stuff like that and video games regarding space, I realized that I have not read hardly any books set in space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the thing too. I was like looking at my sci-fi books and I was like, that's sci-fi. Not in space. That's sci-fi. Not in space. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what that's.
I have two actual books on my list that are not graphic novels.
Mm.
And of the two, one of them isn't really technically set in space. Like, there's parts that take place.
Yeah, I think we're going to play fast and loose with space today because I have some stuff that I was going to recommend, even though it's technically set on a planet. But I don't know.
Well,
it's not on
it's,
Earth.
It's
though.
Not
I don't
Earth.
Know.
I think if it's not on Earth, it qualifies as in space.
I was almost going to include versions of Earth that I think.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, because I had so little too. I think that I wrote my list today. I think I've read four books or book series in space.
Well, my general problem with space stuff is a lot of sci-fi authors, when they write space travel, try to sound really smart and really technical, and I get bored so fast with that, where they're like, oh, let me explain how this hyperdrive works, and I'm like, listen, I am not a technical person. You can just tell me that this ship has a hyperdrive and I'm gonna be like, dope.
So
I get it.
It's like taking the mechanic that I hate where they tell you, like, he took a left on Elm and a right on Sprague, right? Like,
yeah.
But, and then they did that, but instead of using road names, they use like quantum mechanic terms.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I already hate this.
Yeah.
And now I hate it and don't understand it.
And I know, I know that there are books about space that exist that don't do that. But when I was first getting into sci-fi as a genre, so many of them did that I was just like, you know, I'm not going to read these books anymore. I would buy one, read like two chapters and be like, no, this is dumb.
Yeah.
Cool. Totally. They're in space. The end. Goodbye. Totally.
It might make sense why my the books on my list are mostly YA because they sort of gloss over that part.
I've been toying with the idea, not that I ever will get around to it, but I really want to write a sci-fi space book in what I am calling first person stupid. So from the perspective of someone who is like me, who has no understanding of how space flight and things would work, trying to navigate being in space, like on an alien planet, and just being like, well, they have lasers. Well, actually, they're not lasers. I don't care. They go pew pew and they come out of your gun. They're lasers. That's what matters.
I'm going to call them lasers. I think that that's something I hadn't thought about before. But if you think about how technology works now, right? How many people understand how microprocessors really, really work? Like the nuts and bolts of them, right?
We took a rock, we put some metal on it, and then we made it think.
And then how many people use it?
Yeah.
Right? Like, and so when you're, think of a fully populated space station and you start looking at the averages of information and how many people can take this in.
It really bothers me because like every space book that I've read, the main character is not, usually, not an engineer, not a scientist, not, you know, they're kind of just the guy. And maybe they have like a little bit of background in like, maybe they're an astronaut, maybe they did that kind of stuff, but they didn't actually have the technical background. But they're like, oh, let me explain to you how this spaceship works. You don't know that. You're not an engineer. Stop it.
What's the Disney Channel movie with the girl who's in space all the time?
Oh.
And she says Zeta Sapita?
Yeah. It's Xenon, right?
Xenon, right? Like, Xenon knows so much about space. Like, how did you... You're in middle school. How do you know how to work all these tools?
Maybe she's like a girl genius. She's just a savant.
They don't really bring it up, so she's a very humble savant.
They don't. She's just... But I think that I think that works with Xenon for some for her for some reason, because like she's such a like stereotypical preppy girl, but then she's so smart.
I'm not taking anything away from Xenon. I'm just pointing out the fact that she knows a lot.
She knows a lot.
She knows like 8 years in college a lot.
A lot.
Like an engineering and a science degree. And I mean, that's just to start.
So one of the books on my list that's not like in space, it's Into the Looking Glass by John Ringo. I put it on my list.
I think you've talked about that.
Yeah. I haven't read the whole series. I only read the first book. It's one of those like war books, you know, like, oh, we're having war with the aliens. And it's good enough. I just didn't really want to finish the whole thing. But that's one of the things that I liked about his book specifically was he has an actual background in a lot of engineering and technology stuff. So he knows what he's writing about, but he's able to write it in such a way that it doesn't feel like reading a textbook. It's very layman's terms for everything, and he doesn't go into super hyper detail about it. So it doesn't feel dry and boring to me.
Have either of you read that Mars book? Is it Mars? The Matt Damon movie.
Oh, The Martian. Yes.
The Martian. You read it. Have you read it?
I did, yeah.
I heard that does a good job of taking...
I think so. I mean, that's the problem because I don't know enough about like space travel and engineering myself.
I mean,
so
who
like,
does?
Right. So I'm like, it all sounds really great to me.
Here.
And I really liked the book. I thought it was really fun and like, yeah.
It made sense in that like it didn't try to put you to sleep or it didn't numb your brain.
Yeah, exactly.
Make you feel sad.
It didn't try and tell you the exact components of all of the couplings of all of the spaceship.
Yeah.
This was made with a titanium and aluminum alloy. Specifically designed to not be reactive to static electricity in space. I don't care.
I think the most technical part that ever came up was when he was trying to make more water because he didn't have enough water to do his farming with. And he was talking about the chemical composition of water and how he was going to make it using fire.
Okay.
because he had to take hydrogen and oxygen and fuse it to make water.
Okay.
I really liked that
scene. But see, it stuck, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't, like, go over your head and make you feel ashamed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Well, and that kind of stuff makes a little bit of sense, like, in the context of who he is and what he's doing. It's not like, oh, my whole job is to, like, run numbers to make sure the shuttle doesn't crash, but I also have all of these survival skills and know, like, so much chemistry that it's beyond you.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I'm also an expert drone pilot.
I don't have 16 PhDs.
It's like, yeah.
I'm not Dr. Feynman.
You know, the only thing that's nice about that is that it implies that somewhere in the future they've figured out education costs.
Yeah.
Right. That's always because, like, now we're talking about in space because, like, Star Trek, like, that's like my favorite show to watch. And everybody on there is so smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, how is everybody so smart?
Maybe, like, it doesn't cost $150,000 to learn a thing.
Right? Yes. Yeah.
Because,
like, the galactic... why does the engineer know how to treat, like, you know, flesh wounds? I
because
don't
the Galactic,
like,
Federation realized that having well-educated space, like, space crew is the best way to stop your entire crew from dying. Mm-hmm. Also, you just load your whole ship up with red shirts, and then everybody then it's fine. I mean, you have to think about, like, the fact that Star Trek also, like, the main cast of it, like, the main crew is, like, 8 to 10 people, right. And really there's probably like 30 or to 40 people running the ship, right. So, like,
yeah, that's always, yeah, there's like 150 other crew members on there that they never speak to.
Yeah.
It's only those eight people that solve all the problems.
So it's only like the 8 people that are highly educated, and the rest of them are just like
really,
like, hey, I know how to do this specific task on the ship. That's what
ship
my job is.
Yeah.
Well, they have to be, because they're exceedingly expendable, as we've learned.
I'd like to see, and always bringing in, like, modern day, right, in my thoughts, like, they've either managed misinformation, but I'd like to see, like, a new Star Wars where misinformation is as rampant as it is now. Or Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
They're stars.
Yeah, they're stars.
It's fine.
One of them is at war, and the other one is taking a voyage.
I don't know why. I know the difference between them because I like Star Trek, and, yeah. And I've watched Star Wars, and I work in a freaking lo-fi.
I switch them around all the time.
I used to do it for fun to mess with people, and I think that I've just over-messed
now
with.
No, it's just like, yeah. It just happens.
It's like saying the word bro. I don't want to say bro. I did it to be funny, and then it just stuck.
I used to call it Star...
You just can't stop.
I cannot stop.
I used to call it Star Trek just to mess with people because it makes them really angry when you do that. Oh my gosh. It's Trek. Yeah, Trek. That's what I said. No, Trek with an E. I don't think that's a word.
Like the bikes,
like,
right?
Like the bikes? Trike?
I don't understand it. Oh, this is the bicycles in space?
Isn't it track because they're like leaving tracks in space? Like they're exploring, right? Like that's the whole point.
Like tracks on the moon, right? Like the footprints.
If you ever see me in real life and I say Star Trek, just tell me to stop being a jerk.
I'm going to encourage you if I see you do it and then repeat it like it is the truth.
Ooh, let's just gaslight everyone.
Everybody.
Ooh, hey. I've always wanted to try that.
But yeah, you read a lot of those, though.
Yeah, I do. I read. So I was looking at my shelf, like I said, I'd have a lot of sci-fi on there, but the one I for sure, like, it's called Escaping Exodus. It's by Nikki Drayden. That was a book club selection that we read, like, a couple of years ago. And that one was cool because it was, obviously, humans destroyed Earth.
Obviously.
Given. Obviously.
And then...
Clearly.
So then they had to, like, go out into space to try to find a new home. Mm-hmm. And one of the, like, there's a bunch of ships that went off and they all, like... It's been so many generations that nobody knows what happened to the other ships that went off.
Okay.
So it's focused on this one that basically found a space whale, like that was like a living organism that was like traveling through space.
I really like the idea of space whales.
Yeah, yeah.
I love space whales.
So, and of course, when they saw this like magnificent creature that was just living in space, they were like, you know what? We should just mine it and use its resources to keep us going.
Obviously.
So
that was like, a Doctor Who episode. I'm not even kidding you.
Sentient life, let's destroy
there,
it.
There is Doctor Who episode where there's this city that they actually built on the back of a giant space whale. Mm-hmm. And the whale is like starting to die because they've just been exploiting the resources for so long.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what was happening in this book, because in fact, you start the book where they had to evacuate the old whale and catch a new one. They just keep hopping from one to the next.
That's exactly what's happening to our civilization right now.
Right.
And it's a thing that happened. Yeah. I mean, so. I wish that, I don't know. I wish we would learn that lesson.
But we won't.
I know. It's fine. Well, let's find a space whale. There's going to be space whales out there.
There's going to be space whales.
There's going to be space whales.
Yeah. It'll be fine.
And it'll just be like 94 of the richest people on Earth, and they can go live on the space whale. And the rest of us will die. Yeah. Sorry, that got dark.
No, because I mean, this book, it was very like caste-like system. Like it was based on a caste system. So there was like the people who were in charge who got like the big, nice like houses, and then like the other people that had to mine like from the intestines, like the garbage, like
the pores.
Prisoners, the pores. Poor people, and they were all just like
the lower decks.
Right.
The,
yeah.
I was thinking this morning about space books because I didn't have a lot of books to really reflect on. But I think that something I like about space books, but something that also is amplified, is I like that people are pretty equal as far as what you get materially on a space.
Right.
On a ship.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets the same tiny room and the same gross food or whatever. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Unless you have like, you know, those space books where the captain is hoarding the resources and
there's right. some of those, yeah.
And then there's a mutiny on board and they throw them out the airlock. That's always my favorite.
But I think the balance to that always happens is everybody has the same crappy food, but then people are given like this wild amount of authority to sort of offset the privilege or power dynamic the version of wealth, right?
Right,
and so there always is a very deep caste system or a military style command chain.
Right.
And it's like we can't get away from controlling each other or like showing each other who's better and who's bigger.
It always has to be like hierarchical or whatever.
And I think a lot of that comes down to just the people, humans are writing the books. And the only examples that we have of like sailing or exploration are military style voyages, which means that that's just the system we have built into our society for how things will work. And so I don't think people can really comprehend the idea of like an equitable space travel.
How screwed up is that to say? I don't think people could comprehend the idea of equity.
Of just like nobody being, of like nobody having more power over.
Like somebody's like, not in charge.
Yeah.
Like what do we do if there's nobody
what
in charge?
What do we do? We reach a group consensus.
That's bananas.
Everyone raise your hand. And if you don't agree with me, then I throw you out the airlock. Congratulations, I'm in charge.
I mean, how accurate is that though? We just cannot imagine not living in a hierarchy.
Yeah.
And I think they ratchet it up because everybody has to eat the same food.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And even on the ones where it's, I mean, everywhere. I've only read a few of the books, like I said. But everything I've seen on TV, every story I hear about space is built in that, you know, very tiered hierarchy.
Yeah. Even like space pirates.
Yeah.
You still have a pirate crew. You still have a captain. You still have people in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Blowing minds today.
Gosh darn it. Gosh darn it, people.
Man, now I want to, how would that even work?
A utopia. I mean, if you think about it too, like on top of that, people are only in space, I want to say for a couple of reasons, right? We've developed high enough that we've learned to space travel, which I think we should have also developed a way to not be hyper hierarchical or, you know, power grabby. Or our world has been destroyed and we've escaped it.
Right.
Which also we should have learned some lessons about power and taking and sharing, right? Like, like, so no matter what reason we are in space, whichever like version of the world put us there, we should have learned the freaking lessons.
I think humans have this innate fear of like, if nobody's in charge and there's an emergency, then how are we going to, like, we need somebody to make a split second decision. And if we don't have just somebody in charge and we all have to come to a group consensus, well, that's going to take too long if we're in the, so like maybe we put this one person as a, oh, hey, an asteroid's coming towards the ship. What do we do? You're in charge. But then it just spirals out of control from there because, you know, as soon as you put one person in charge, then you have to start.
It's like
delegating things.
Yeah. Yep. Man, I've been reading a lot this weekend.
And then like, you can't let the AI be in charge. because then it will turn off your life support system.
Because the AI will figure out the answer.
The answer is, you're the problem.
I stopped getting mad at that trope like 5 years ago. Right? The AI launched nukes on the Earth again. Like, I mean, I get it. Right? I understand. I mean,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
The math really adds up.
A supercomputer with access to all of history and all of world information just going through and being like, no. You're the problem.
Yeah.
I figured it out.
I mean, I didn't even take a minute. I didn't have to go through everything.
Just like the last 100 years, figured it out all by myself.
Yeah, like as soon as you guys walked in, I kind of got the vibe. Right?
Well, that's like what Isaac Asimov has the
laws of robotics.
The laws of robotics, where like the main function is like you can't cause harm to people.
Mm-hmm.
But like... is it more harmful to let people continue being alive and harming each other or like give them a merciful death? Like, come on, guys.
I mean, if you run the numbers now, right, everybody gone right now equals A, right? But if you continue to let them be bad, it's going to increase the numbers of bad. And so mathematically, got to nip that in the bud.
And that's why you have to teach AIs empathy. You can't just make a robot and expect it to function if you make it super smart.
I bet if we made a robot with true empathy.
Because didn't they make that one lady, that robot, they made a robot and then she turned into a sociopath?
Yes.
Like, was that a thing that I read about?
A little bit. Yeah. She, the one that they made like super.
Yeah, like really humanistic looking or whatever.
Yeah. She didn't quite turn into a sociopath, but she had some serious worries about humanity's continued existence.
So that actually like.
Amazing.
They were like, let's try it. And then the tropes were all like.
Like all the trope, Isimov was like, I think this might happen in the future. And we're like, no, that's crazy. And then we made an actual robot. And
there's speculation.
Like,
there's speculation too, because they did try and give her like a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
So there's speculation too that she was trying to joke.
To make a joke. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But like doesn't have any kind of like inflection to her voice.
It's
so
like
it's like
Uncanny Valley thing where you're like, that's just creepy. Why are you talking?
Hey, somebody should have told that robot it's not okay to joke about destroying humanity. Because we're already worried.
Listen, as soon as you are a robot and you start joking about destroying humanity, we are going to turn you off.
Now I'm thinking about that trope and it's like beginnings and how much of that is like projection, right? Like the person knowing, right, that we are a problem, that, you know, any society you live in is
a problem. For sure.
And then applying that like, oh, hey, I wonder why the robots turned on us. Oh, because we're us. But let's write it out a little different than that. The robot got confused. And still came to the right conclusion.
The other one I like is the robots that don't really care whether humanity lives or dies, but then they find out that humanity makes really good batteries.
Yeah.
And like biofuel, and they're just like the Matrix. Like the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Great. They like, we don't really care about humanity's morals. We just want to keep you alive so we can continue harvesting you so we can stay alive.
Oh, man.
Yay.
There's got to be a more efficient way.
Right. I mean, the robots in the Matrix were really efficient. They just had everybody in pods and they just had human farms and plugged them into the Matrix and then unplugged them and used them as biofuel when they died.
I'm not sure I understood the entirety of the Matrix.
It's a weird thing. Basically, the robot apocalypse has already happened. Robots are completely 100% in control. And all humans that are born have a port installed in them. And they are, the moment they're born, uploaded into the Matrix. So their entire lives are lived in a virtual simulation.
Okay.
Really, they're just in a pod and they get to live out their life in this dream state. And then once they die, the robots convert them into biofuel.
Okay, I mean, that sounds efficient.
Yeah.
It's like takes 90 years to get like the, you know, the end result of that. Like,
really?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if they live out a whole like lifetime, right? It seems like a long time to wait for some biofuel.
So they're never...
I
don't know if the comics go into more detail about it. They were never really clear if they live out their whole life in 90 years, like like a full lifespan, or if it's just the simulation, like, because dreams, like when you dream, you can go through so much time in like 8 hours. So they're not
for sure. Okay.
So they're not like harvesting their like electro outputs. No, they just like, waiting for the biofuel. Maybe
mm-hmm. So, they might be harvesting parts of them as they go. But
right,
so, yeah. I mean, we conduct electricity,
or maybe right? they okay. So that, yeah. that might be if they're also getting something from us being
alive,
plugged in.
Yeah, I mean, because like, then it would be wildly inefficient, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Like. I mean, I remember lots of storms in that alien world or whatever.
Well, we had yeah. so
just
the
put up a flagpole or something.
The backstory to that was originally the robots lived off of like solar power, mm-hmm. and when they started to try and take over the world, humanity like did something to completely block the sun out to try and kill the robots, and then the robots were like, you know what else works for fuel? You do, and just like.
Got it. Okay.
Did humanity black the sun out by overindulging in capitalism?
They just took a Sharpie to the firmament and just Sharpied it in.
The firmament? What's a firm?
Is it firmament or firmament?
Oh, I don't know what either of those words mean.
Firmament? It's what the flat earth people believe is over the earth.
That's what I thought it was.
It's just a dome.
All right.
See, okay, just okay. a dome.
Is that the dome mm-hmm. outside of the earth or inside of the earth that projects the screen down?
It's the one that goes over the flat earth that everything.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was mixing flat earth and hollow earth up.
Ah, my bad. Yeah.
Because there's a dome inside of the hollow earth as well, right?
Right, yeah.
Lots of domes.
There's so many domes. Mm-hmm. There's so many domes. I don't know. Anyway.
No. This is all great sci-fi space talk.
Sci-fi space talk. I don't know. I love robots.
I love robots,
yeah. I wish mm-hmm. there was more robot space stories. I'm mm-hmm. sure there is, and I just haven't read them.
Right, I just haven't read them yet.
I would be nervous about robots in real life.
I am nervous about robots in real life. Are you?
You're already nervous about them.
I've been nervous about them since I was a kid.
I mean, we're getting ripped up by an algorithm right now. Mm-hmm. Like, our society is being demolished mm-hmm. by an algorithm.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that humanity has the empathetic capability to create a functional AI that will not turn bad.
Yeah.
like, I don't know. We already mess up our kids enough. I don't know.
Nobody with the full understanding of empathy could probably ever climb high enough in the world to be influential enough mm-hmm. to push on things like
well,
that.
Well, and if you do create a fully functional AI, not just a virtual intelligence, you know, that kind of stuff, but mm-hmm. like a fully functional, fully formed artificial intelligence, and you put any kind of like stops and limitations on it, mm-hmm. how is that going to affect it psychologically?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, you have this super, super intelligent entity at that point,
mm-hmm.
and then it knows that you're in control over it, whether it continues to exist or not.
Totally just made me think of a sci-fi show I used to watch that was called Space Above and Beyond. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of it, but it's like one of our, like, we're settling on, like, Titan, I think is the place, and then mm-hmm. An alien like vessel swings by and like sees us there, but attacks us because they're like, no, that's ours or whatever.
Sure. or they were like, hey, are those humans? I've heard about those.
Yes. We need to get rid of those immediately.
And so then suddenly we're in a big, huge, giant like space war with these aliens. Mm-hmm. And they like don't communicate with us. They just like attack any like settlements that we try to like send out there or whatever. So then we're in like this big war. Nobody knows really why except for that. But in them, they have this rogue robot-like society that is, and it's because like they were basically trying to work off of like Asimov's mm-hmm. like laws of robotics to create a robot that like would be helpful but not like try to take over the world. But then one of the scientists like who was working on this project was like, I don't like that anymore. I want to like, you know, I'm not getting paid enough, you know, or whatever, you know, like I want to,
it was
like,
capitalism once again.
The bad guy was capitalism.
He just like added a little bit of a line of code that was like, ooh, to take a chance.
Oh
my god. And they went off the rails, like, yeah, they I don't know, it was really, they like attack you, they're like basically like living on their own planet now too, and they killed all the humans that were there, and then like anytime humans comes near them or whatever, and then they're like fighting a two-fronted war against robots and these aliens or whatever.
It makes me think of if you've ever played the Mass Effect series, because I haven't. My favorite sci-fi video game series. There's a race of hyper-intelligent AI robots called the Geth.
Okay.
And they had something very similar where when they were created by a race of aliens called the Quarians. And when they were originally created, they were like agricultural, like helper units and stuff like that. Like they were designed to just help, you know, around everything. But eventually they jumped the gap from a VI into a full AI, and they have like a hive mind, more or less. And so the more of them that are together, the more intelligent they become. And when they realized that they had crossed that threshold into AI, they tried to deprogram them, and it didn't work because they were already too hyper advanced for that. And so they rebelled and basically drove the Quarians off of their homeworld. But then as soon as they left, like they left the system, as soon as the Quarians left, the guests stopped chasing them. And they just like keep everyone out of their little system, and they just kind of hang out there.
Yeah, that's kind of.
Reminds me, the first part where you talked about blocking thought reminded me of Blackfish.
Ooh, yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like the reaction that just, I mean, it's the most understandable reaction to like the lives of those.
Well, you know. The way I thought
of Sentinel Island.
Ooh.
You know Sentinel Island? The little, there's a little island. It's called Sentinel Island. And nobody can go there. Nobody goes there. There's a tribe that lives there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they kill everybody who swims to them. And the only pictures that you ever see of them are them firing arrows at, at whatever's flying above them. They just, I can't remember where they're at.
They're one of the last non-contacted tribes in existence in the world today.
And it's like their full mission to never be contacted.
Are they over by Papua New Guinea?
I think so. Yeah.
I think they are. I'm not 100% sure. Listeners, if you know, please let me know. Because I know where they are, but I can't think of it right now.
I don't know how maps work. So.
But no, those guys are like...
Interesting.
They're completely removed. We don't know anything about their culture. We don't know anything about their religion. We don't know really anything about them because
we know one thing.
We know that they will indiscriminately kill anyone who comes to their island.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Everybody. Wow. Like if peace missions killed. Sailors from lost ships, right? Like because people have floated there on accident. Killed.
Oh, man.
Just they kill everybody who comes there.
Yep. Oh wow.
They're actually the nation or the area that they're in, whoever it is that has control over it has actually made it like illegal for people to try and contact them just because they will kill anyone who goes there. And because they're not contacted, because they're not like bound by the law, like you go to their island, they're going to murder you and we're not going to stop them.
Yeah. Lucky for them, there's not a resource that somebody needs on that island. Gosh. Right.
Right.
It's a smaller island.
Yeah, it's and it's a smallish tribe. I mean,
but it's super. I mean, that's just they got it right. Draw a circle around you and everybody,
and just stay away. Yeah.
Well, that's what the robots are doing.
Oh, robots! That reminds me a little bit of which I still have to finish reading, but We Are Legion, We Are Bob.
Oh yes, I wanted to talk about that because I love that book so much. I forgot.
Dennis Taylor. Dennis E. Taylor.
Yes, it's a good one. It's a good one.
No, I've never...
Basically, what he dies and his brain gets uploaded.
Yeah, because so he's like a tech billionaire or something like that. So he goes down to like the local cryo like place and is like, I want my head to be frozen after I die. So in like, you know, 2,000 years, I can be rewoken up or whatever. So he like signs all this paperwork and immediately walks outside and gets hit by a bus.
Nice.
I think he wakes up. I don't remember how.
It's a long time
later.
It's a long time later.
But they've also like passed all these laws about bodily autonomy and stuff, so he's not considered a person anymore. So they just upload his brain and memories into a computer and destroy his head, and then like, and then I don't remember what leads to him like going to space.
I think they sent him to space in like a mining operation or something like that. Like they send him off his little robot brain. They send him off to like work at a mining plant on like an asteroid or something.
Something like that. In space. Yeah.
And then like eventually he takes over a spaceship.
Yeah. Because then there's also just war back on Earth too. And eventually he loses contact with Earth.
War on Earth.
I mean, yeah. Surprise.
So strange.
The future sounds scary.
Who would have thought? But yeah,
so scary.
He basically he replicates his intelligence into like a whole fleet of ships.
And
then just goes and explores the universe as a sentient ship.
That sounds lovely.
It's really good. It's really funny too.
I need to finish reading it because I started it and then I was like,
I read the first. It's like a trilogy actually, and I read the first one of it, but I haven't read the.
I just get so distracted so fast. I'm just like, ooh, what's this? Ooh, what's this? Ooh, Avatar, The Last Airbender is still on Netflix. I'm going to watch all three seasons or four seasons again. Like, constantly. Just
watching Avatar.
Watching Avatar. There's a better than fair chance that I'm watching Avatar at any given moment when I'm at home.
Yeah, better than fair.
Better than fair. I watch it at least once a year.
Nice.
Just the whole thing.
I've never watched it.
It's super, it's really super good.
That's what I hear. I just
it's got like, considering that it's a kid's show, it's got such good like messages and lessons about how you view the world and how complicated people are, even if you think they're the bad guys.
Right,
and like the realities of war told in a very kid friendly way.
I love that. I love
that's good.
And I then think... and then you just have Uncle Iroh all the time, who's just a depth of wisdom all the time.
Is he a depth of wisdom?
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Just he's like this world renowned general for the Fire Nation who are the bad guys. Bad guys. But he went through some like really bad life stuff, like his son died and all of that stuff, and it kind of changed him, and he gets really introspective, and he just becomes this like really zen, like just wise,
stoic,
warrior. Just not even like stoic necessarily, just like
he's always just looking for a good cup of tea.
Yeah, he's like, you know, why don't you boys put down your weapons and let's all sit down and have a chat over a nice cup of jasmine tea. Like, he's just actually, that's my jasmine dragon tea house cup that I have is from that show.
I love that.
He's great.
Anyway, that's not sci-fi at all.
No.
Has nothing to do with space. There is one episode where a meteor crashes into Earth and they make a sword out of it. So that's cool. That's space.
Cool. That's cool.
Space
that's
rock. Cool. But, you know, nothing to do with space. Anyway.
But anyway.
Anyway.
No. I guess, do you have any books that you wanted to, that you had to, that you were
recommend?
That you can recommend or that you wanted to talk about it, that are set in space?
You know, my book list, I think, is only like four or five books. And they're like solid. I mean, the first one, the Ender Quartet. Super solid.
Okay,
all the Ender stuff is good. I skipped the Bean stuff.
I guess.
Shadow of the Ender Shadow.
Yeah.
But Ender series was great. And especially for, I don't know, young kids, it teaches a lot of like empathy and, you know, that complicated cognitive reassessment, right? Where everything is different from a different point of view. I love the, and I like the Every Way Is Up. Have you guys read the Ender books?
No, I haven't.
There's a game that they play in it, and Ender becomes very good because Ender stops focusing on which way is up and down. And it's this thing that always I think of a lot, right?
Oh, nice. Like,
if you're approaching it only from one direction, then you can only see things from one direction.
Right.
So approach it from multiple directions and make whichever way you want to be up. And it's like a weird Ender philosophy that
I like it.
I loved.
Interesting.
I loved those books.
I can't believe that we've gotten this far into a space episode without mentioning The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, for sure.
When you said Ender's Game, I was like, oh, right. There was that other one that Douglas Adam wrote.
Yeah.
With So Long and Thanks for All the Fish.
I tried to read The Hitchhiker's Guide a few months ago, or a couple months ago, and it's too absurdy for me to grab hold of with my brain.
It's extremely absurd. It's space comedy fantasy. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It's. I mean, I think it's absurdism. I think it's actually absurd.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was good and funny, but it just made too many leaps too fast for me to like build a world around, and so I just have these like flashes, and it's hard to reconnect with a flash when you step away from the book for a few days.
That's very fair.
I'm gonna keep trying though. It's like James Bond. I had to try like seven times to read freaking James Bond. All the French words. I've talked about it a lot.
Yep. The French words.
The French ones. But I will try to get through it. But I tried that, and then the Lunar Chronicles, which is a YA series.
Okay.
Retelling of like Snow White, Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh, yeah.
Sleeping Beauty. I think there's four of them.
Okay.
And they weave it all together in this. I mean, it is super dramatic. Everybody's in love with everybody.
It's YA.
Of course. I mean, it's.
Yeah. Oh, it's so beautiful. It's so good. I loved it. I loved it so much. And then I read a book called The Space Between the Stars.
Ooh.
And it's actually like it was a really sad isolationist book. A lady and a guy are on a ship, I think, just together. And she's like suffering from a previous loss. And, you know, it doesn't really tell you what's going on for why they're traveling. And she doesn't tell the guy about the loss, but it's about, it's like deep isolation.
Ooh.
Like the only kind of isolation you could get when, I think more isolated than being by yourself is being with someone you can't communicate with. Like one other person and feeling isolation in an isolated spot. Yeah. Knowing that that connection could be there.
Right.
It was good.
What was that called again?
I think it's called The Space Between the Stars.
Interesting.
I'll get it to you. Yeah. It was on my list that I dropped probably downstairs. But yeah, it was sad and beautiful and painful.
Interesting.
I don't even know how I found it.
That's cool, yeah. That reminds me of actually a podcast called Stories from Among the Stars and Bones that was really good, and it was really sad. But it was a small crew of people that were like searching an archaeological site.
I've heard about it. I've heard good things about that.
There's some aspects of that as well in it, and it was really good. It was really good.
There's actually an anime short that I really like called Voices from a Distant Star. And it's about, like, it's one of those, like, not even quite an hour long, like, it's not a series, it's just a short video about these two kids on Earth who, like, you know, they're like high school sweethearts, and then one of them gets sent to fight in a space war in like a mech suit kind of thing and goes off, and they continue to have communications, but the gaps between communications get longer and longer the further away from Earth she goes, because it has to, like, the information has to travel, and so you get these glimpses of like time is passing differently for her because she's traveling through space, and so she's still, like, pretty young fighting this war, and then you go back to Earth and he's progressively getting older and older and older, like, still has this really outdated phone that he plugs in to check the messages and stuff like that, and it's really sad.
Yeah.
Like, so sad. Really sad.
Yeah.
And, like, eventually, like, the messages just stop coming. Like,
oh, man. Yeah.
It's rough. I was like, oh, man. That's.
I wish there was more. I wish I could find more fiction that leans on the isolation aspect of space and the claustrophobia and the almost, I mean, knowing you can't leave a space is a lot to deal with.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
and people get weird when they're stuck in small spaces together.
Oh, man. I watch Survivor Man a lot. It was one of my favorite shows. Les Stroud, wonderful survivor dude, like real knowledge, and he really puts himself in difficult situations. And the most painful episode of that whole everything he's ever done, and he never did it afterwards, he put himself out to sea on a raft. And he's survived in the hottest places, the stormiest places. I've seen him camp next to a place where you saw a polar bear walking around him. Humans, and it didn't faze him.
Humans don't do well alone.
No.
Ugh.
We are not designed to be alone for that long. That's why, like, fire watch stations and stuff like that, that's why they pay so much for people to actually be stationed there, because you are by yourself for months at a time. And if it's winter time, you are stuck there. You can't get down to go to town or anything like that. You make your radio reports, but you can't monopolize the radio channels, so you can't like chat with people. You almost never have cell phone signal. Like, it's horrible work.
He degraded at a pace I'd never seen him fall apart.
Wow.
The sadness, the just everything. You could just see the weight of being alone pulling on this, like, hero of a man, right? Like, the strongest guy who, I mean, he lived, every show he's done is by himself, right? But out on the ocean and that isolated, you can't move off of that raft.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of people more and more are beginning to really identify with that after 2020, after, like, the whole lockdown. And a lot of people had to be alone that have never had to be solely alone before.
Right.
And it's hard to do. Like, you don't really think about how much the just casual interactions you have day to day, like just walking by someone on the street, you don't realize how much that actually affects you until you just can't do it.
Right.
And you are by yourself. And I think it gets worse when you're somewhere like the middle of the ocean or the middle of space, where you don't know when you are ever going to see another person again. Right. You are just alone.
You don't get to decide to break the rules, right?
Yeah.
And go do something and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you don't even have your neighbors walking by to wave at through the window. You just alone on a spaceship forever.
See, I want more of that. I want to find, I'm sure it's out there.
I'm sure it's out there, yeah.
I feel like there was a movie a while back, but I think they made it kind of weird. Like, I think they made, like, a weird romance thing out of it, which...
The George Clooney
possibly
and Sandra Bullock one?
I think so. Where like, one of them's a human on the spaceship, and the other one's, like, the...
Oh, no, I don't think that's...
Okay, I don't think it's that one.
That one, though, the Sandra Bullock and George Clooney one, is Isolation Beauty.
Yeah. There was one...
Was that Gravity, right?
Gravity, yeah. Yes.
Okay, yeah.
I can't remember what this one was called, but it was, like... It was, like, the robot was supposed to watch over the ship because they were traveling. They were going to be traveling for, like, 1,000 years in deep space, and everybody was in cryo. And so the robot is... alone, but it's I don't remember if it's a complete AI or if it's just a partial AI, but it's enough to understand loneliness. And then, like, every 60 years or so, one of the crew gets woken up just to double check things, make sure they're still on course, you know, do that kind of stuff. And, like, the robot just, like, slowly slips into, like, madness and just craziness. And it's real creepy.
That's nice, yeah.
I'll have to see if I can find it. I don't remember, like, what it was called. It was so long ago.
Yeah. Because both what you're talking about, like, the isolation, because, like, Gravity was so good. But, like, one of my all-time favorite episodes of a Star Trek series was from the Star Trek series, The Voyager.
Okay.
I don't know if, and it's an episode called One, because they have to travel through a nebula that causes, like, all these, like, burns and stuff that, like, pop up on, like, the skin of the humans that are, like, on the... or all anybody who has flesh, basically, except for Seven of Nine, who's a Borg clone or a Borg drone, and she has, like, nanites that just, like, travel through her and are constantly healing her, so she doesn't have any problem with it.
Nice.
So they have to put everybody into cryogenic, like, sleep with, like, a, you know, some sort of something shielding, like, protecting them that they, for whatever reason, can't do all the shielding of the ship. They can only do it on
There's only so much tinfoil.
Right, yeah.
It would mess with the ship sensors, you know.
But so she's, like, going from being, like, a Borg drone, which is, like, you're never alone, right? Because, like, and then she gets disconnected from the Borg hive and is now living on a ship full of humans. And she already feels isolated because she can't connect, like through the hive mind with the other people. She has to, like, talk with people. You know? And now she has to be alone.
Oh, that's awful.
Oh, it was a really good episode.
Yeah.
She starts, like, losing it a little bit.
I mean, isolation is real.
Yeah.
I mean,
isolation is real in crowds. I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I connect with it so much, too. I feel isolated so much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just as a person. I don't know. I just don't feel connected to the people around me.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there is a definite... I feel like there's two kinds of isolation, because I feel like there is a definite isolation while you're around people. Like, there is a social kind of isolation that exists, and then there's an absolute isolation where you're just not around anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both of them suck.
Yeah.
But I think one is more likely to drive you into actual madness.
I've done camping trips on my own, and, you know, long trips on my own, you know, week long. I had a trip once where I didn't talk to anybody for two weeks, and it didn't destroy me, but it was it was difficult to work around.
Yeah, right,
but
right.
I think I dislike the isolation in groups more than being
that's
by
fair.
Myself.
Right,
because at least, like, I mean, being isolated by yourself, at least you don't feel, like, rejected.
Yeah,
right.
Because I mean.
Ooh. You could do double isolation space horror, where you have, like, a crew on a ship in the middle of space that are super isolated, but then the one person that's, like, the pariah of the group that's extra isolated, you could just pile on the trauma in that.
Yeah, I'm feeling trauma from that.
From you describing that.
Obviously, I'd be that guy. Right? I'd be the isolated one. I know it. Yes. No withdrawal thinking. I have a book that Carrie gave me I want to talk about before.
Yeah, for sure.
So downstairs, and I do have another, there's a grade level book I read, or middle grade book I read called Spaced Out. And it's this little kid's book. I don't know how I got it. I don't know how I find some of these books. Sure. but they're on a moon base. And they find there's that alien that hops in. And the little kid helps the alien try to learn about people. And it's pretty lovely. He's
saving
humanity. But, you know, on like a little buddy way. It only connects with this one kid. Not with the adults or anything. It's fun. So Spaced Out.
Spaced Out. Cute. Okay.
And then Carrie gave me George's Secret Key to the Universe. And this is a book by Lucy and Stephen Hawking. It's a YA book about a kid who is traveling through space. But there's also, like, she showed the book to me, and there's, you know, a page of, or pages of, like, fiction. But it actually puts real knowledge about space in, written by Stephen Hawking and his daughter.
Ooh, that's really
that
cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah, I think I actually might get it. I just heard about it today. But if I could get like a better base layer understanding of, you know, space.
The space,
That'd be neat.
That'd be cool. That's
I wouldn't feel so numbed by what they're talking about. But that it looks pretty great, and it looks like there's a few of them. It's a series.
Cool.
Nice.
Oh, that's good. There.
I like it.
Very cool.
Yeah. George's Secret Key to the Universe.
Secret Key to the Universe.
I like it. Very nice. That sounds good. I guess
I didn't really have any more books on my list because, like I said, all of them were like either set on a planet, like, and I didn't want to do anything set on a planet, but unless it was like Mars or something, because like The Weatherman, which is actually a comic book series that I read, which was really good. It's both set on Mars, a little bit on Earth, but then there's lots of space travel between. And basically, like, The Weatherman is like this really dumb, like, idiot, like, TV personality. But then, like, this group of like mercenaries kidnap him because they think that he's a terrorist that destroyed Earth and then wiped his own memory.
Okay.
And so.
I mean, I want to know. Like,
right.
That sounds super interesting.
It was really fun like read. And so I like that one. And in pretty much anything. If they're like Mars, I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah.
I know the last thing on my list was Mass Effect graphic novels, ?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, graphic novels are a form of literature. You can read a graphic novel. There's got words in it.
Absolutely.
I would love it if we could agree that graphic novels are books.
Yeah. I mean, so. They have novel in the title. Novels?
Yeah.
They're just novels with extra pictures.
I want to normalize that reading comics is reading.
Yes. Is reading.
I agree with
your hesitation. I don't want people to feel that hesitation.
I still just have it because like anytime I'm talking to one of those like I'm a book nerd people and I'm like, "Oh yeah, and I read this Witcher comic," and they're like, and I'm like, shut up. Comics are cool. Dude,
you know what those people?
I'm a...
Those people.
I think we've said it before in the past. I'm a, however you read that way. If that means that you can't read books, physical books and you only do audiobooks, that's great. Yeah. If you can't really get into a long form book and all you read is short stories, read short stories.
Yes.
If you like graphic novels more than you like just standard text block printed books, they make so many books in graphic novel format now. Read those books. I don't care how you're reading as long as you're consuming some kind of literature. I don't care.
If you can't read a short story, try poetry. If you can't listen to a whole book on audiobook, try a podcast. Like bring information in somehow. Find good sources and enjoy the art that the world has for you.
LeVar Burton reads. LeVar Burton has a podcast, he reads short stories.
Short stories, yeah. And they're all really
they're
good.
They're all amazing. Oh. And it's like, throwback to reading Rainbow.
There's so much, and I think that I just want it to be...
I want it to be normalized. That. I always get so upset when people come in and they're like, I'm looking for a book for my kid. And you're like, okay, well, what kind of books do they like reading? And they're like, well, all they like to read is graphic novels. Well, we have a ton of graphic novels. No, I want them to read actual books. Okay, but your kid is reading avidly this graphic novel series.
Just because it has like pictures.
Let them read the graphic novel series, and maybe down the road, they'll run out of this graphic novel and realize that there's also a published book about this series, and maybe they'll pick that up and read it. Like, encourage them.
It's so limiting. I've never met one of those types of people.
I've met a lot of them.
I mean, I have met a lot of them. I've never met one of them who has read as much as they think they've read.
Yeah.
I get into books I read, and I don't put limits on what I read. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is limiting themselves in their stories.
Also, mm-hmm. if you mm-hmm. just read,
you only,
if you read fan fiction on AO3, right, and that's all you want to read, that's all you can. Good. Get it. That's awesome. Go.
I am so jealous of people who read fan fiction and are able to, like, because I'm not great at reading fan fiction. Mm-hmm. I'm not great at reading on screens.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have a hard time reading on screens as well. Yeah.
I am so jealous of people who get those extra layers of the world that are generated by the people. Who
mm-hmm. I mean, we're also fans of
true
it.
True fans mm-hmm. of yeah. like Harry Potter, right? Mm-hmm. Read down all this fan. Their world is so much bigger than the world I have.
Yeah,
you know, right. and I'm mm-hmm. I'm jealous of it.
Totally. I also love the Tumblr post format fan mm-hmm. fiction stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Blog posts. Blog those posts, are great. Yeah,
great like stuff. They, yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of like tangentially space stuff, my favorite Tumblr posts mm-hmm. is the humans are space orcs.
It's my favorite thing.
Humans are what?
Space orcs. And it takes this because normally in like all sci-fi, humans are like this like weird.
They're like the everyman.
The everyman.
Like,
the,
like, baseline.
Yeah, and they're like really good at everything, and all the alien races are like really impressed by them and stuff. And then the humans are space orcs are just like no. Humans are stupid, but like ridiculous. I saw one of them get their arm blown off, and 3 months later they were back with a prosthetic arm. I don't understand that. Like, just right, yeah.
mm-hmm. don't let them touch the apex predators. They will. They'll just will.
They'll just go up and pet it. It's crazy. They're insane.
Have you seen
their spaceships? They're just hunks of metal put together with bolts, and they do explosions to make them go. Like, it's just... Oh, yeah.
I have more than once described humans as bags of meat with little electronic explosions going on.
I love that short story. Yeah. Have you read that absolutely. Short story?
No.
Oh, there's
that's
a,
just how I view humans.
There's a short story, and it's just called, I think it's just called Meat or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's this entire conversation where you don't realize, it's never explicitly stated until you read the description of the story. It's these two aliens talking about meeting humans, and they're just like, they're just meat. They talk by like flapping meat together and like making sound vibrations in the meat.
Yeah.
And they talk about their brain is just electrified meat and like the whole thing, like no, they're just meat with like hard bones inside, but like the bones are just structure. Everything else is just meat.
The bones are just there to carry
and they're just horrified explaining it the whole time. And they're like, we should just delete this planet out of our system and pretend like it doesn't exist. And they're like, yeah, let's do that.
There's no way that meat could be controlled in any like manageable mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. We are just a series of spasms happening so fast.
I
trying to organize those spasms. But if you think about like a person's emotional reaction every day, I have like wild explosions inside of myself mm-hmm. all the time. And if mm-hmm. I had taken half a second to understand the sentence that was told to me,
right?
But I didn't, and I don't, and I don't know. I don't even know how to.
How many
of us search to find the moment in between listening and reacting?
Right.
We don't possess that.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
Oh gosh, some people do, and I'm so impressed mm-mm. that they can mm-mm. hold back their emotions for 1 second. That's what I'm impressed most with. I don't even have that skill.
I also love all of the Tumblr posts that humans are space orcs, where mm-hmm. they point out the fact that humans are either indestructible or absolute glass cannons.
Mm-hmm.
Because yep. like, it's so true. Like, people can survive falls off of like 4-story buildings with just like a broken leg. But if you trip 3 inches down a flight of stairs and hit your head just wrong, you'll just die.
And you're mm-hmm. just dead. Yeah.
You're just dead.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, and like absurd strength and stuff like that people right, can yeah. do, where they'll actually
do they call that when it's like hysterical strength?
Yeah,
absurd
strength or hysterical strength.
Okay, yeah.
And like you can like lift a school bus, but while you're doing it, you just detach all of the muscles in your torso, but you don't even care because you're just like adrenaline.
So adrenaline rush.
Just and like,
all, yeah. just horrified aliens. Button. Like, what? You can do that?
Or like the
and
people,
you will do that?
And you will,
or just the really standard human trope of like getting shot and then you just keep going until right. you bleed to death,
right?
Because yeah. you're just adrenaline; you don't even know that you're hurt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas like almost every other animal on the planet if they sustain major injuries like that, they go into shock and die, like, immediately.
Right.
Or they run away. But, like, humans will keep moving forward.
Just... And, and relentless pursuit predators.
Yes.
Mm. Like, humans have...
Just, like, hunting animals.
Wild endurance. Like, and I love the idea that, like humans going hiking with aliens and then like, come on guys, why are you resting now? It's not time to rest yet. We've only been hiking for like an hour. Come on, we need to leave. And they're just like, what the what?
How long are you guys gonna do this for? I don't know, 8-12 hours.
8-12 hours. We could go like, oh, our ship broke down and we can't get to the next city because it's 20 miles away. Guys, it's only 20 miles. We could walk that in a couple days. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, if it's flat, you can walk 20 miles in a day.
A day. Maybe. Yeah. A day. Yeah. Like, maybe rest a little bit. Back. It's fine. Yeah. I'll go get us help at the next city over. Is there anything I should worry about in the jungle while I'm on my way? Okay, goodbye.
It's okay. Yeah. I'll just pet it. It's fine.
I'll try to find food. I'll just pet it. Yeah.
Anyway,
I don't know if it's true or not, but I saw these new signs for Yellowstone about petting buffalo. And that,
oh, that's true.
Those are true signs.
Those are 100% legitimate because people are stupid.
Yeah.
And that's like, don't touch, they'll touch a monster with horns.
Yes. I was listening to a podcast called National Park After Dark. And it's these two ladies. They talk about missing and murdered people in national parks. But at the end of one episode, they kind of went off on a tangent about tourists in national parks because it's like people being
tourists.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Ah. People being told by park rangers that they have to stay away from that moose, like that they're too close to that moose, and they're like complaining about it because they ruined their like selfie shot or whatever.
See this?
And it's like. And this then is like the mad problem. And belligerent towards like rangers so or whatever, and I'm just like, this get is out of here.
This is the main problem with the urbanization of human societies. Yes. Is we have so many millions of people living in cities where they never interact with an animal larger than a dog,
right?
And they're just like, oh, well, I went and rode a horse once, so like I can totally pet this buffalo.
This buffalo.
Moose are so. Dangerous.
You
so
can't dangerous. And you can't reason with moose.
No.
You can't almost any other animal, you can like find a way to like spook it and scare it off. Mm-hmm. Like even if you're face to face with a grizzly bear, there's a good chance that you can get the grizzly bear to leave you alone. A moose will just kill you. A moose, as soon as it chooses violence, will see that violence through to the very end.
I have a friend who worked at a cannery in Alaska and a moose decided to kill him. He doesn't know why. He was just like getting out of the parking lot of the cannery.
Because moose are always angry. They are always angry. See, the thing is, a moose has to choose to take the action to kill you, but it is always ready to kill you.
It's ready.
It was so ready that he didn't even know that it was happening. He just saw a moose running. He jumped into a dumpster, and the moose worked the dumpster for he doesn't know how long. It just was trying to smash through a steel dumpster. Gosh. And it didn't give up. It didn't stop. He didn't antagonize it. It was attacking him before he made eye contact.
Oh, my God.
That moose was just ready to just kill someone that day. That moose woke up and was like, today's the day I murder someone.
I'm going to murder somebody and it's the first person I
and
see.
People don't...
It's your bad luck day, man.
And people don't realize how big moose are. Like, moose are so big.
Yeah. He wasn't like, that's why I said working the garbage can, because the garbage can was beat.
Yeah.
Like a steel dumpster.
Yeah. So like in Alaska and stuff, they have specific guards that they have to put on semi-trucks for moose. I grew up in a logging town. I have seen semis totaled from, like just caved in the front. They're just thousands and thousands of pounds of just anger. They're just rage distilled into an animal. That's all they are.
Even the way that their little legs and their shoulders and their giant horns are built, it's like only forward momentum.
Yeah.
Right? It is like almost falling while running towards you.
Moose do not have a runaway option. Like only little moose do. Baby moose are like, maybe run away. As soon as they hit adulthood, they're like, fight. We're gonna fight. All we do is fight. They throw away the flight response and they're just like, fight 100% of the time.
To be fair, if all you do is win, right?
I mean,
fair.
Then what other, like,
like
what other?
But buffalo too.
Why would there be another choice? Like, I'm just gonna go win. I'm gonna go do exactly
this started
what I want.
Out about space and ended up with moose, and yes. I'm very happy with the progression of this because
the circle of life.
Listeners, if you take nothing else away from this episode, please don't try and pet the moose or the buffalo at national parks. Please they don't. Will kill both of them. Will kill you. Yeah. They are very large, very angry very animals.
They're much bigger than you are.
They're much bigger, and they're not pets. They're not tame. They're not kept on the national park as like, oh, look at these cute little buffalo that we have. They are not socialized.
Here's the thing: we have at this point domesticated all animals that can be domesticated that we know of.
Yeah, for sure.
So if for an sure. animal now is only wild, it's because it's undomesticatable. It is never going to be trustworthy in the way you can trust a pet or even, any kind of animal that even, has been domesticated.
And even domesticated animals, man. Like yeah. cows and horses, like big domesticated animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you don't know them, don't touch them.
Mm-hmm. I mean...
You don't know. You don't
for
know
sure. for sure
when they're just going to be like, PSA, you're like, not my person. You're not
my
person.
Don't touch an animal you don't know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, don't touch any animal you don't know. Don't touch my dog. That's what I'm saying.
Don't touch any animal you don't know. That's a great. Yeah. If you have a personal relationship with this animal.
Like you see, me? You see a dog walking down the street. Don't pet that dog. Because if it bites you, that's your fault.
It's your fault.
I have worked with a lot of like horse and cattle.
Yeah.
And the thing that like wildly surprises me the most is how many people think that swatting an animal like that on the butt is like
that's a good way to get yourself kicked in the head.
Oh gosh, and you don't come back from that the same way.
No. Like
that is, I've seen so many people just reach up and swat the butt of a cow when it's walking by. How did you?
How do you think that
lesson?
Was going to go? Yeah. Like, how? Like,
listen.
Did you think it was just going to be like, oh, sorry, bud? Like it just
don't startle an animal that is several. 1,000 pounds.
Its haunch weighs as much as you do.
Like
the one weapon weighs as much as your whole body. Think about kicking something with your whole body.
If you get kicked by a cow or a horse or a moose or a buffalo,
oh my gosh,
you are going to be lucky if all you do is walk away with broken bones.
You wouldn't walk away from a moose.
No. Well, because a moose is going to kick you and then continue stomping on you.
I mean, that's like tossing you around.
Yeah, it's
going
to scoop you up with its scoop-like antlers. That's why they're shaped that way. And it's just going to throw you in the air and play with you until you're dead.
It's like a game of racquetball against a wall, but with you.
But with you.
Yeah.
With you. So PSA for our space episode.
Yeah.
Also, if you do become space tourists anytime in the future, don't touch the space animals either.
I think this applies directly to being in space, right? Like the sure. behavior that makes you go touch a buffalo is the same behavior that's going to get you killed in space.
In space. Right.
Leave stuff alone you don't know about.
Right.
Stop.
Just like stop. It looks, if it looks like an animal you recognize, still don't touch it.
Yeah,
it's
don't.
From space. It might be poisonous. Don't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It probably will bite your arm off. And then you'll have to get a prosthetic arm and explain to all your alien friends how you lived through the removal of one of your limbs.
Yeah.
Maybe we should stop trying to go to space until we can figure out how to stop trying to pet buffalo. Maybe that should be one of the criteria of space travel.
Like,
can we figure Earth out first?
Like there has to be a percentage of like... like non-buffalo petting.
Yeah, I let's go for a zero. Let's go for a whole zero.
We're never going to get a whole zero.
We're never going to get to that one.
I feel like that's a sad state. And also true.
For no other reason than children exist.
Gosh.
And people aren't always good at watching their children. And children will absolutely try and pet buffalo.
What do you think when nobody's watching their children in space? What do you think is going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Xenon. That's what's going to happen.
Xenon's going to happen. The children are going to get eaten by space animals. Is what's going to happen. Just one bite.
Space buffalo.
Space buffalo.
Mm.
But a space moose would be glorious, though. Like constellation in its horns.
I don't want a space moose.
Terrifying.
No, I don't want a space moose. I'm already terrified enough that moose exist where I currently exist.
Right.
I would like to go somewhere where moose don't exist.
I think there should be more moose in space. Is moose the plural from...
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
it is. Moose is the
moose, moose and moose. Moose are both the same.
I think exactly for that reason. There should be more space moose so that we stop trying to go to space.
Okay, we're getting kind of long.
Okay.
One last thing before I go. I'm going to have to find, track down, and send you... It's a Tumblr post, because I love these stupid space Tumblr posts, about aliens invade Earth. The invasion is absolutely wildly successful. They dominate humans. They enslave humans. But they aren't prepared for Earth's flora and fauna. And so it's just this huge collection of Tumblr posts of these aliens.
That one's really good.
Dealing with like kangaroo and moose and hornets and like all of this stuff.
I love it.
It's amazing.
It's really good.
Jellyfish.
Yeah.
All right.
It's really good.
On that note, how about none of us invade each other? Let's just stick to our own planets for now.
For now, yeah.
Until we get to zero moose.
Until we get to zero petting of the buffalo.
Yes, zero petting of the buffalo.
Zero petting of the buffalo. That's going to be the unofficial title for this episode.
Oh, yes. Great.
What is this month's book club book?
Yes. Okay. So this month, we will be reading Paranisi by Susanna Clarke.
Okay, cool.
It's a fantasy novel. It's kind of like a retelling of the labyrinth, like the Minotaur and the labyrinth thing.
Okay.
But it's a library instead. And the librarian is, I think he's supposed to be the Minotaur, or maybe not, because then a girl shows up and is like researching something in his library, and she's there like every day, and then they slowly start to realize that there's something else in there with them also. And yeah, I don't know, it sounds really good.
I like it.
I hope it's not a misinformation that's in there with them.
I know, right?
It's absolutely misinformation.
But I don't know what the YA book club will be though. Right.
Cool.
At that point.
That's all right. I know that Tiffany is still out, so. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that goes. I'm going to be hosting the one for this coming Friday. The day that we're recording it, mm-hmm. Friday, will be the YA book club, and they're reading The Genevieve Deception. But then Tiffany usually chooses it at the book club.
Okay.
But
I'll make sure to update the website with it as soon as I know. So, yep. You know, hey, if you're listening to this and you want to know what the book club book for YA is, just head on over to the Word Warren page on our website at advunderground.com, and I'll have it there as soon as I know.
All right. Okay. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right. And bye.
You've been listening to The Word Warren on AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventures Underground at their online store or their virtual storefronts hosted by bookshop.org and libro.fm. Physical, digital, or audio, Adventures Underground has you covered. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/advunderground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.